I'm Guy Kane. I'm based at the Hero Center for Practical Ethics. I'm deputy director of the center and research fellow, also connected to the Oxford Center for Neuroethics. We also work closely with the James Martin 21st Century School and its research centers.
So Guy, you're working in the area of neuroscience and ethics. Let's start with the science first. What kind of things are being discovered about the brain and morality?
Well, philosophers have been thinking about morality for a long time and have been speculating about what's the source of morality, what goes in people's minds when they make moral decisions. But it's really very recently that science has made a concentrated effort to uncover the secrets of morality or the roots of morality, if you want. You have evolutionary theorists or primatologists looking at how apes might develop basic, you know, innate moral capacities of a very primitive kind, and we have some interesting evidence about that recently. You have neuroscientists using new neuroimaging techniques in the last decade to actually see what goes in people's brains when they make moral decisions. So, for example, when you decide whether you should sacrifice one person to save a greater number of lives, when is that permitted, when is that deeply wrong? And what neuroimaging and neuroscience has allowed us to do is actually see what goes in people's brains when they make this decision. Is that ruled by reason, as a lot of people think? Are they just reasoning their way to a conclusion? Or maybe it's just this brute emotion or gut reaction that draws them to one choice rather than the other.
So to put it very crudely, when people are making moral decisions, different bits of the brain light up depending upon how they're reaching their conclusions.
Yeah, that's correct. Most of us, when we reach conclusion, it happens very immediately. We just know that that's wrong or that's right or that's problematic or that's good or bad. We don't always know how we reach that conclusion. But when you look at people's brain, you can see which brain areas are more active when people make those kind of decisions. And by connecting that to the normal functioning of the brain, when we study when someone is feeling angry or sad, you see a certain area lights up, and then you look what happens when they make a moral decision. If the same kind of areas light up, you can at least reasonably conclude that those decisions involve emotion. Similarly, when people make a mathematical calculation, a different area of the brain is involved in that. If we then see that when other people make moral conclusion, the same area lights up, we can again reasonably infer that these people are actually using reasoning or cognition to arrive at a moral judgment or moral conclusion.
So I can see that's empirically absolutely fascinating. But what's it got to do with philosophy?
Yeah, I think that's the big question for a lot of people in moral philosophy. There's the so-called gap between is and art that Hume talked about a few hundred years ago.
Right, the gap that just because something is the case, that doesn't tell us how we ought to behave. The fact that bits of the brain light up when we make a particular moral judgment doesn't show that that was a right or a false moral judgment.
Exactly. So there's no simple line from seeing that this bit of the brain is active, you can see it on the screen in a yellow color, doesn't mean that that's a good decision or bad decision. But the opposite view, in which what happens inside the skull just is irrelevant, is also probably too extreme. What might be relevant is by understanding the processes that lead us to make certain decisions and trying to evaluate how reliable these processes are, how seriously we should take them, we might be able to change our mind on certain questions. Take this example of emotion. If you think that emotion is something that's seriously unreliable, it distorts your moral judgment, finding out that certain moral views are based in emotion would give you a reason to take these views a bit less seriously. Of course, you don't find out these facts or views about emotion just by looking at people's brain. It requires philosophy and reflection as well. And there are people who hold that emotion are in fact a very important basis for morality. And in fact, if you reach certain moral views without involvement of any emotion, that would actually be a bad sign for those views. So the debate shifts into philosophy of how to interpret the neuroscience.
Okay, so you've explained how neuroscientists can help the philosopher. What about the other way around? How can the philosopher support the neuroscientist?
Yes, one thing you can do, I'm not sure it's support, but it's slightly more critical role of making sure that neuroscientists, when they talk about morality and investigate morality, that they're investigating the right thing and in the right way. And here, the philosopher, after centuries of reflection about moral concepts and moral questions, philosophers do know a thing or two about it that scientists might find useful, but it's not just this critical role, there's also a positive role of scientists have their own question about explaining behavior and how the brain works, but they're not necessarily interested coming from the point of view of finding out things that will be immediately useful for ethics itself. But that's something that philosophers can do by pointing out what would be interesting to find out and what would have the most implications for the practice of ethics or answer ethical question.
So give me an example of a new avenue that you're pursuing, a new experiment that you're hoping to undertake.
Yeah, one thing we've been doing here with neuroscientists and psychologists here at Oxford is trying to understand why different people reach such opposing views on particular moral dilemmas and problems. Views, for example, about certain ways of killing people. When is that justified? When saving lives justifies killing others? What ways of killing or harming others are permitted and what just strictly forbidden? And people have, within philosophy or even in everyday discussion, have very, very different views on this. So one thing that we wanted to find out is what might explain these differences. If we look at people's psychology, look at people's personalities possibly, look at what goes on in the brain, could we find out why people reach such different conclusions? What explains that? That might shed some light on the philosophical disagreement and help us think about it a bit. One interesting thing we found, certain people who reach rather uncommon views, they are more willing to harm or kill others when that would lead to a better consequence, when that would save, for example, a greater number of lives. They think that it's appropriate to sacrifice a certain innocent person because that would just save a much greater number. Most people think that's wrong, but there's this small group that think that's not just acceptable, but even the right thing to do. And we found that these people reach that kind of decision in very different kinds of ways. Some reach it seems, because they just have a very different sensibility of emotional response to the situation, less inhibited about killing others to achieve some goal. But there's another group that seems to achieve the same conclusion, not because they are different from the majority in this way, but because they seem to think about the options to a greater degree, and they can overcome this immediate hesitance or reluctance to harm others because they see that there's this better consequence to be achieved. If you just looked at these people and asked them their views, you couldn't distinguish them. But if you look at their brains, you see that something very different is happening as they reach exactly the same moral decision. And that's something that we couldn't do without using neuroimaging and fMRI. That's what's new and exciting about it.
Guy, thank you very much.
Thanks.